to verse 10.
Sahayajna praja srishva purovacha prajapatihi anena prasavishyadvam esha vostvishta kamadhuk
sahayajnaha prajaha srishtva pura puraha pura uvacha prajapatihi anena prasavishyadvam eshaha vaha astu ishtakamaduk. So, coming off of the previous verse where Bhagavan said, you know, a person is a karma bandha, someone who is bound by their karma, because of raga, dvesha, punya, and papa, bound by their karma, unless those karmas are done for the sake of yajna. And yajna means an offering to Ishwara, and since the offering is to Ishwara, we say that it's done for the sake of Ishwara. And then, so he says to Arjuna. So Arjuna, may you be a mukta sangha, one who is free from these binding desires. Sangha, binding desires. Mukta, be free from. May be one who is freed from these binding desires, and being such a one, may you perform karma for the sake of Bhagavan, for the sake of Ishwara, in that spirit of yajna. Okay. So now he says, saha prajnaha prajaha shrishtva pura uvacha prajapatihi. So prajapati is the Lord Brahmaji, the one who, when the universe comes into manifestation, the one who is there in Swargaloka, but also really Hiranyagarbha, the one who has that Hiranyagarbha sthanam, which is that infinite knowledge, you know, the one who pervades the creation as like an infinite sukshma sharira, in a sense, the one who has the infinite knowledge from the subtle creation, the five elements that come into manifestation having not gone through this panchikarana, becoming fivefold. So that is like, would be very similar to the sukshma sharira for the jiva, but on an infinite level. So Brahmaji we view as the one, as the when the creation comes into manifestation, the one who is the Lord and who is the Lord of Swargaloka, there in Swargaloka, but also on a different level, it's Ishwara from the standpoint of the whole Maya Upadi, the one who has that infinite intelligence. So he says, Prajapatihi, the Lord of all, the one who's the Lord of all of the praja, all of the beings that have come into manifestation, that are going through the cycle of birth and death. So he says, pura, in the beginning, meaning at the beginning of any kalpa, at the beginning of any manifestation. So pura, prajapatihi uvacha, the Lord said, prajapatihi uvacha. The Lord said means in the form of the Vedas. The Vedas are viewed as the very breath, as the very knowledge that the Lord, that Bhagavan, gives to all of the beings. The Vedas are considered to be beginningless, and they're called apaurusheya. Apaurusheya means they're not man-made. It's something that comes as an infinite, the expression of infinite knowledge, through the minds of the rishis, you know, to take care, to help humanity. So what he says here now, Bhagavan said, Prajapati said, the Lord said, pura, at the beginning, he says, sahayajnaha prajaha shrishtva. Having created, you know, all beings, praja means all of the people, all of the all of the living beings, but here we're talking about the people, human beings, having created all of them, saha prajnaha. So it goes like this. Prajapati, at the beginning, having created all of the beings together with the yajna, together with these rituals, we'll see in a minute, he says. Then he says, anena prasavishvatvam eshaha vaha astu ishtakamaduk. He says, by this, by these yajnas, may you grow, may you be nourished, may you prosper, but may you grow. I'll tell you in a minute more. And so he says, may these Vedas, you know, or by this, by this, may these Vedas be, may these yajnas, the saha yajnaha, be a karmaduk, ishta karmaduk for you. Ishta karmaduk, a karmaduk is a cow that gives all desires. You know, so there's a beautiful story about that, I'll tell you in a minute. So may these yajnas be, function as an ishta karmaduk, one who's giving, ishta kamaduk, one who's giving, giving you, satisfying all of your desires. All of the kamas means the desired objects, ishta, which are desired by you. May these yajnas function as an ishta kamaduk for you. So these are Bhagavan's second sentence, is Bhagavan's words. So it says, Prajapati, having created all of these beings together with these yajnas, with the rituals in the beginning, he said, then he said, anena, by these yajnas, may you increase. And then may the yajnas be as to let them be an ishtakamaduk for you. So that's something which satisfies all of your desires. So there's quite a bit in this. We have to just go through it. In India, from the moment of a child's birth, and even in the womb, you know, there are many rituals that are being done as kind of markers. When the child is in the womb, there's a ritual for the child's health, that it can, and the mother's health, that it can be born. When it's born again, there's another ritual. When the teeth start coming, there's another yajna, there's another ritual. When the name is given, there's another ritual. When the child is at a certain age where he's able to, either 8 or 12 usually, he's given the sacred thread, that's another ritual. And then all the way through the life, there are many rituals which are done, naimittika karmas, which are done on specific occasions as the child grows, and then goes through all of the different ashramas, like being a brahmachari, and then being a grahastha, and then a prashta, and finally sannyasa. So rituals are taking these niyata rituals, these yajnas which are enjoined, take the person all the way through their life. And then there's the nitya rituals that are to be done daily, and depending on what the ashrama is, your brahmacharya or your grihastha, household student or a householder, you're single, you know, or you're married, or you're living pre-sannyasa lifestyle, or you take sannyasa, there are daily expectations, daily rituals for you to do. Except in sannyasa, you're freed of all rituals. Then you're just meant to study and be with yourself. So your ritual is, all rituals are compressed into om, are replaced by om, because om itself is the very name for the reality. If I say om, then I'm invoking in my vision, when I say om, I'm invoking the Brahman, and I'm invoking this waking state, the dream state, and the deep sleep state on both a vyashti, an individual level, and samishti level. So the Mandukya Upanishad the whole Upanishad is on this sacred syllable, om. So that when you say it or when you chant it, the whole vision comes into your mind. So all of the rituals, everything that has been done for the whole life, all of the antakarma, all really for the sake of antakarma shuddhi, as we'll see, that culminates in like all of those rituals are packed into this one omkara, which is what the sannyasi is left with, which is the greatest kamaduk. Because for the sannyasi, for the one who has jnanam, I am all of this. The self, I am Ishwara, myself is Ishwara, and I am all of this. And so that kamaduk has been completely fulfilled by knowledge. The kamaduk has been completely fulfilled because there's nothing that's not, that is not me. So all of my desires are fulfilled then because I am the very ananda, which I've been seeking from all of these, only these are the things. Only knowledge can give me that absolute, all my desires are fulfilled. So when Prajapati says here, you know, being with all of these yajnas, by these yajnas may you grow in many different ways, and may they become an ishtakamaduk for you. Kamaduk, that cow, the cow that gives all that you desire. So that gaining all that you desire is what culminates really in sannyasa. Because in sannyasa means sarvakarma sannyasa. Whether you're a karma yogi or you're living in the world or you've taken the orange, that sarvakarma sannyasa is the recognition of I am the whole. There's nothing that I can want because I already am that. How can you want what you already are? It's not possible, you already have it. And so that is really this ishtakarmaduk resolves itself into self-knowledge. But so here, the rituals in, say, in a Hindu life, there are throughout the life and throughout the day many, many different rituals that a person is enjoined to perform. And in a way, it's a continual, the life has so many parts during the day and throughout the life where you are recognizing Ishwara. You're making an offering to Bhagawan. And so that means that for a Hindu, Bhagawan is very much a part of your life throughout the day. And that these are my duties. Bhagawan and my relationship with Bhagawan and all of the Ishtadevatas are part of my duties. It's not just what I'm doing here, you know, I have to cook and clean the house, I have to go to work and make money. These are all duties on Vyavahara, on another level. You know? But, and those also become, you know, they also become yajnas. But until those all become yajnas for you, you're given many, many yajnas to do. So a child will grow up having that responsibility, that sense of daily responsibility to Ishwara. These offerings need to be done for Bhagawan. And so I do them throughout the day. That means that Bhagawan is a very integral part of my life. The Ishtadevatas are an integral part of my life. So now what happens for us is that, in fact, my relationship, what Swamiji now calls ecology, we discover a very deeper ecology in reference to our relationship with the creation. Ecology really means your relationship of the individual to the environment. But that relationship to the environment becomes a relationship to Ishwara. Right? Because Ishwara, Bhagawan, is not away from the environment. In fact, the whole order of the creation, each one is viewed as a devata. And so, everything that I do is in relationship to Bhagawan. And I've been given, for a Hindu, I've been given that vritti from a very early age, and it's easy for that to extend to everything, because even in the Vedas themselves, the whole ecology, the whole environment that you experience is made into a devata. Gaurav said, Vayu is the wind, Varuna is the water, Surya is the sun, Chandra is the moon. You know, so every single one of the prithvi is the earth. You know, akasha itself, space itself is a devata. And so everything that I experience, everything that is containing me is named, has the name of a devata and is viewed as a devata, like the Surya devata. Prithvi, our earth, our mother, is viewed as our mother, you know. And then we have to treat Surya Or treat the rains and treat the water as a devata. That's our relationship, is one of love and respect and care. It's one of yajna. It's one of offering. It's one of, what's the word that, we'll see in the next word, bhava. Bhava means that bhavya, it means one of nourishing, one of caring, one of taking care for, one of respecting, one of praising, one of cherishing. Cherishing is actually one of the words, cherishing, nourishing, loving, caring for, worshiping, bhavya. And so that sense of bhava toward the earth and toward all of the elements, you know, with that prasada buddhi, is something means that my relationship with the earth is a responsibility that I have. The responsibility I have toward the devatas. Prithvi is a devata. So because it's in our mind, as we understand that, it becomes a living being. It becomes like a devata, part of Ishwara. And so how do I treat Ishwara? You know, how do I treat Ishwara? And so all of these, you know, we have the trees are devatas, the grasses are devatas, everything's a devata. And so that brings about a certain sensitivity. So everything that I do, in fact, becomes for mumukshu, for jnani, becomes a yajna, you know, because everything is an offering and a response, a relationship with Bhagavan. And so that's what makes it so incredible. And what this verse is about, actually, is that as a human being, so all of the animals, they don't really have free will. They're just responding according to their instincts. It's not that they don't have intelligence or feelings. They have deep feelings and they have deep intelligence, deep capacities. It's so beautiful. You know, but they don't have to worry about doing this right or wrong. They simply do what is there to be done, what their instincts tell them to do, and they just naturally do it. With all of their heart, it's not that they have such a beautiful heart, and they have so much wisdom and so much intelligence, but they don't have to do this type of decision-making. They're not drawn away into a dharma. Say some animal trainers, they teach you, because you're learning how to be with your animals, the animal is always right. They're always right. Because they're not making decisions. They're just responding to the environment they find themselves in. And so it's you have to learn how to be with them. They know how to be with you, but you have to learn how to be with them. You know? And I think in the creation also, the creation, as we'll see, the creation, all of the elements give so much to us. They're giving us the rain, they're giving us the sun, they're giving us the plants, the animals, they're giving us the food that we eat. It's all so much is given. But we have to give back. Like if somebody gives so much to me, you know, I should at least say thank you. You know, I should come into relationship with these things that are given. Which is what this chapter is about, is that that's the yajna. The yajna is that recognition, it's that thank you. It doesn't have to be a ritual, but it does have to be a response. It has to be a response of gratitude, a recognition that the earth and all of the elements, you know, the our whole ecology, means the whole environment that is containing us, is serving us and helping us and giving to us, and we need to be able to give back at least with a thank you, you know. And so we'll see a lot of verses like that. So here, when Prajapati is saying, you know, let this yajna be a kamaduk for you, because in the end, besides just fulfilling the desires that you need, the things that you need for you to live, you have the prarabdha karma that will give you really everything that you need to live, and all of the elements will look after you, will take care of you. By your rituals, by that attitude, the rituals being that attitude of gratitude and participation, you know, and receiving those as Bhagavan's grace, you know, that gives you antakarna shuddhi. That antakarna shuddhi culminates in atmajnanam. And the self, so the antakarna shuddhi itself attracts your teacher It gives you the viveka. It gives you, in the end, the atma-jnana, at which time, you know, the whole universe is yours. Everything is yours. In the meantime, everything is yours because you are everything, right? It's not like, oh, look at all the gifts I got. Well, that's true too. You know, that's true too. But the fact is, you are all of those gifts. That is who you are. You are Ishwara. And so that these rituals result in that Antakarana Shuddhi, which makes everything, the Antakarana Shuddhi, the Prasada Buddhi itself, makes everything a blessing. In fact, what happens with the Antakarana Shuddhi, even before it really results into knowledge, I said it's very, you know, they're very, very similar. I have everything I want because I want what I have. That's like a little mantra. I have everything I want because I want what I have. You know? So and that's what I want. I want what I have. That's the prasada buddhi. You know. When the mind has shanti and is full, you want what you have. When the mind is hurting or in pain, you don't want what you have because you're in pain, so you need something else. Right? But when the mind is whole and complete and full, then you are full, and so you love what you have. Even from the standpoint of the prasada buddhi, from the standpoint of jnanam, you know, as I understand, not only do I want what I have, but what I have is fine, you know. This is all myself. There's no second person here. There's no second thing here. So that becomes, all these yajnas which lead to the antakarana shuddhi become the greatest ishtakamaduk. So Swamiji in his commentary tells the story of this Ishtakamaduk, of the Kamaduk. There was a sage called Vasishta, and he had kind of hidden in his ashram, just in the back there, he had a cow, and this was a very special cow that could fulfill any desire he had. Just had to ask the cow. There it was, immediately. That was the Kamaduk. Okay, so the very special cow. So Vishwamitra, who was a king, was coming and traveling with his retinue through the forest and came to Vasishta's ashram, the sage's ashram, and said, "Can you please feed us?" Here he was coming, this king, with all of his horses and all of his whole retinue. And so Vasishta said, "Yes, certainly." And so he told his cow, and a whole banquet was laid out immediately, and all of the retinue and the king enjoyed tremendously this wonderful food. And so then Vishwamitra told the Vasishta, "How did you do that? How did you do that so quickly?" And he told the king, because the king asked, he told him about the Kamaduk, about the cow. So Vishwamitra said, "I want that cow. I want that cow for myself. Can I please have the cow?" And so this is a sage, as a sannyasi sage, Vasishta said, "Yes, you may have the cow, but the cow won't give you anything unless you become a Brahma Rishi." Means a rishi who is a Brahma Rishi is a rishi who knows Brahman. In fact, Swamiji gives a quote from a particular Upanishad in his commentary on this, that there's actually a verse from one Upanishad, the unusual Upanishad. I can't quite remember the name of it, but it means the Upanishad, the name of it in English is the Diamond Needle. So anyway, in this Upanishad, it has a definition of the word brahmana. Because we say brahmana, you know, there's the brahmanas, the vaishyas, brahmana, the kshatriyas, the vaishyas, and the shudras, where the brahmanas are the ones who really have predominance of sattva. That's their major characteristics, predominantly sattva. So there's the scholars and the priests and the teachers. But the real definition of a brahmana is the one who knows Brahman. But that was so interesting. The one who knows Brahman is a brahmana. That's why as we gain knowledge, we're all brahmanas, right? You're predominantly sattva, you're Brahman. But in the end, what really makes you a Brahmana is knowledge. So the real meaning of a Brahmana, he goes like this, the needle that pierces into the real meaning, he says, there's something sushi, I wish I could remember, we can look it up. So that which pierces into the truth of any nama. So what is the real truth of the word Brahmana? The one who knows Brahman. The one who knows Brahman. And so now Vasishtha was explaining to Vishwamitra, who's a great king, you know, who was also known for his temper and his anger. He was also known for his giving curses and his he has a temper. So now when when Vasishtha tells Vishwamitra, you have to become a Brahma Rishi in order for this Kamaduk to be able to do that. Otherwise, he'll just be a cow for you. And that was really irritating to Vishwamitra. That's a big task, you know, especially for him, and he has so much power and so much ahankara, huge ahankara, you know. But he decided, yes, it's worth it. I want that cow. Because if I have that cow, I can have the world. I can have every single thing I want. Yeah, I will do it. And so he spent years and years and years doing tapas to become a Brahma Rishi. And in the end, when he got so close to becoming a Brahma Rishi, there was only one thing he had to do, and that was to give up wanting to be a Brahma Rishi. Okay. That was the hardest thing. So he was able to do that. And in doing that, I suppose, he got the Kamaduk. But at that point, Swamiji goes to what is really the Kamaduk. What is that really? Really, to become a Kamaduk, for you to have a Kamaduk that is going to work like one, to actually be one, you have to know Brahman. So the Kamaduk really is the one who knows Brahman, then that cow becomes a Kamaduk for you immediately. Immediately, everything that you want, you have. Because there is nothing that is not you. There is no ananda that is not your being. Everything that the entire creation is yourself. So you become one who has this beautiful Kamaduk. Beautiful Kamaduk is that Atmajnanam, is that self-knowledge. So that's the story. So here, that's part of the story. In fact, I think it's in the Mahabharata, if you find that out, there'll be a whole story leading up to the story and a whole story going on. This is just like the little kernel of the story. So anyway, so so here, in fact, one thing that's being told is all of the Vedas themselves, the first portion of the Vedas really is for Antahkarana Shuddhi. The whole thing it's a Dharma Shastra, you know, and it gives you a relationship with the creation which gives you that prasada buddhi, because it comes that you're continually offering everything to Bhagawan. And so then everything becomes Bhagawan. And then you gain the Antahkarana Shuddhi. Then you become a mumukshu. Then you gain knowledge. The second part of the Vedas comes into play. The second part of the Vedas is there for the person who has the Antahkarana Shuddhi enough to have become a mumukshu. And then Bhagavan just doesn't say, oh no, you're a mumukshu. Well, I'm sorry about that. You have all this vairagya now, what are we going to do with you? You know? You don't want anything, nothing works. That's true. I'm sorry you discovered that. No. You gain that vairagya, you know, that viveka, vairagya, because you have the Antahkarana Shuddhi that gives you so much inner space, you know, and wanting to know Bhagavan, really. It's wanting to know Ishvara, instead of just wanting to pranam to Ishvara and receive the prasad from Ishvara. I want to know you, you know, I want to know. And so with that, a person becomes a mumukshu. Yeah. And that mumukshu then, you know, evokes the second part of the Vedas. The first part of the Vedas is evoked for the Vaidikas those ones that accept the Vedas, is that they're born into that Vedic culture and they have Shraddha in the Vedas, then the teachings of the Vedas and how to be in the world, all of the rituals that are enjoined on you, the whole thing really, besides just satisfying your desires, that allows you to satisfy your desires with the prasada buddhi, always keeping the Ishwara into account. Then as the mind gains some antakarana shuddhi, you know, I become one who wants to know Bhagavan, you know, wants to know the truth, wants to know what is my, who am I, why am I here, where is the ananda, where is the shanti that seems to come and go, what is its source, who am I really? That person then is available, is an adhikari for the second part of the Vedas. And for the second part of the Vedas, you need that pramana. The pramana is not there in a book. It's there in a book now, but the pramana is something, it's a teaching. And that teaching has to be handled by somebody who has that vision. So the pramana itself, that all the Vedas used to be only oral. They're all transmitted orally, not in books. In fact, when books started coming about, they were worried. Everybody's knowledge is going to be in these books. They write about this. All their knowledge is going to be in the books. The knowledge has to be with me, you know, not in a book. And so all of these Upanishads are not books. They're living teachings between Guru and Sisha. And they're handed down. And that parampara, the teacher teaches the student, who then becomes a teacher to his or her students, on and on and on and on and on, from beginningless time. It's kind of like, who came first, the chicken or the egg? So, you know, that Guru Sisha parampara is beginningless. It belongs to Bhagavan, it belongs to the Vedas, it's Vedic, you know, and it's something that is a promise in the tradition and in the Puranas, that there's never, this creation will never be without that pramana. The creation will never be without mumukshus, and it will never be without the pramana. The Vedas will hold throughout the entire creation, all of the cycles, Kali Yuga included, but there just won't be very many of them. Yeah. So, you know, we're lucky to have a good size for us, a good size sangha of people, you know. That's a beautiful, that itself is just such a huge blessing. But the blessing will always be there, you know. If you want to be, what do you call it, kind of the dominant group of people in the world, that's not going to happen, at least in this yuga. You will not be the dominant group. You're in the little tiny tiny group. But it's still here. It's still here with all of its beauty, with all of its preciousness. It's here fully and completely. And it always will be. It will always be, for when a person becomes a mumukshu, they will get this knowledge. That's the promise. And because of that promise, you don't have to worry about it. Like, all these people are being misled over here, and they're doing this crazy, screwy thing over here, and this is happening over here. What's going to happen to all these people, you know? They'll make their way. All they need is to become a mumukshu. In the meantime, they're getting what they need. They're getting what they need, really, for their antakarana shuddhi, for their own growth. Everybody is getting what they need. You know, you can have some shraddha in that. You know? That's why in the meditation, sometimes that meditation was really designed, that we did this morning was kind of meant for what we're going into now. Because even if you, when you're with your life, and you're with the life that you have, and there's some difficulties and abuses and hard things that take place in the life, right? But you can look at it all like this. Though your parents, let's just take the parents, poor parents. But those are your parents, you know. Your karmas brought you in as to be born from those parents. Those are your parents. And you were brought in to a situation that was complete with punya and papa. Their punya and papa. if each one of them, Punyan Papa. Because this world, taking a birth here, is Punyan Papa, right? It's 50-50. And so you yourself have your own, you have your own things that you're working on. You have your own Punyan, your own Papa. Okay, so when you take this birth, you're going to be ingesting in a way without anything that you can really do about it. It's just built in. You're going to be swallowing, ingesting their dharma, their blessings, some their intelligence, their so many gifts from them. And you'll also be ingesting, taking in their wounds. That's just how it is. It's the same for your children. They'll be taking in all of your goodness and all of your care and all of your wounds. Because those, unless you're totally free from those wounds, you know, those wounds are going to be shared by them. So then how you can look at that, if you're trying to, how to make sense of that or how to receive that in a way that is actually very, very beautiful, it is that those wounds, that their wounds are now passed on to you, and their goodness is passed on to you to care for and to heal, you know, to actually heal them. And in healing their wounds, then those wounds are not passed on anymore. And also, they become blessed by your ability to heal their wounds in yourself. Do you understand? That's a tremendous blessing for what is passed on, but it's also a huge blessing for the parents themselves. And so that is such a prasada buddhi. It's like saying to your parents, which are, you know, honor your mother and father. That's in the Taittiriya Upanishad, that honor your mother and father is always there. It's considered very, very important. But if you really think about what that means, is that you are accepting, you know, who they are, with their hurts and with their pains that are going to be given, passed on to you, and then you are working with those to heal them. You know, that's all of the work we do. You can look at that as tremendous prasad. It's tremendous prasad and love and respect, you know, for the little ones inside, but also for your parents, because they are not purposefully inflicting their wounds on you. They have wounds. They were born with wounds. They have wounds. So what are they going to do about that? Pretend like they don't have them? They don't even know that they have them. They're just responding out of their own pain. You know? And so to accept all of that with that prasada buddhi, and then to be with that in a way of care and love and doing the knowing how to do the work that we need to do in order to transform those is a huge blessing, you know. I took this birth, so their wounds are my wounds. See what I mean? Because I took the birth with them. So they have so many good things to offer, and they have so many wounds to offer. But I took that birth. That means I'm the one that's my work, is to be with those wounds and then to transform them. If you say it's their wounds, that's really my wounds, because I took the birth with them. So my job is to transform those wounds. See what I mean? So that's something really, I think that's a really precious thing. You can think about it even in terms of your partner, in terms of your children, you know, but most for your, because your children are, they're also born to be with you, you know? That's why they're born. They're not born to somebody else, they're born to you. Those are your children, you know? And so they're bringing also their own karmas. And so how to receive those children with that prasada buddhi, where all of the things where they're excelling are that's their punya, and the things where they're having problems, that's their papa, you know, and so how to be with all those things in a way that where you care, where you help. How to be with your partner. Your partner isn't coming to you as a devata, you know. Your partner is another human being. So how to be with your partner, all of the beautiful things that you give each other, all of the things that are so caring and wonderful, and all of the wounds. So for both, there's going to be, both things are there. So how to to accept all of those things with that attitude, that prasada buddhi attitude, which is transformative. So it's such a beautiful understanding. You can, and so this, you can see it in this way too, but you can also see it, what about the earth that you've inherited? What about the waters? What about the animals? How to receive them all as they are and to do something that is curative or helpful or caring. So that's that prasada buddhi. That is the antakarana shuddhi. That extreme, it amounts to extreme care. Swamiji once told me and some others, he said, no one can, he was just speaking very privately, kind of very personally, and he said, no one can really understand the amount of compassion I have. Yeah. He said, it's boundless, it's an endless compassion, you know. And, yeah. Yeah. Because I used to think, it took me a long time to deeply understand that, and to be able to kind of give my blessings to his boundless compassion. Because his boundless compassion, you need, well, I find growing up with Swamiji, you actually need to take that boundless compassion as a prasada buddhi. Because his boundless compassion requires that you also have boundless compassion. You must have boundless compassion to be with somebody who has boundless compassion. Because they are making situations that are really unpleasant and hard for you. Very frequently. Very frequently. For the sake of one extremely problematic person here and there, who are even get put in sometimes in positions of authority that are temperamental and mean and ruthless, and yet they're allowed to be in that authoritative position, which means that they can do lots of things to you, you know, and make your life kind of one where you think, it's like, I think, Swamiji, how could you do that to us? How could you do that? You know, cause so much pain to the whole ashram, cause such a problem for the whole ashram. Why did you do that? Give them so much power and then they're just lording it over us and being just making everybody miserable. You didn't have to do that. You know? So I would feel, Swamiji has made a mistake here. I didn't go along with this. That's really how I felt. If I'm ever a teacher or running a course, I will never do that. I will never do that. I'll never put a grouchy, mean person in a position of any kind of authority like this. You know, it's just so terrible, you know. And Swamiji used to do this kind of stuff all the time, you know. And, you know, it took, I don't know what it took, but to get to a place where I could say, okay, you know. But what it is we need to have the same compassion that he has. That's what it boils down to. And his compassion is not conditional. It's not conditional. It's like, okay, I'm not going to give you what you really need because this might hurt so-and-so or so-and-so. He doesn't even think like that. This is what is good for you right now. This is what you need. He just does that automatically. He doesn't really think about it. He just does it. One time, as a little caveat to this, he told one young man that he had given sannyasa to, he said something like, don't take any positions of authority because it will often try to conflict with your abhayam, your vow of abhayam. So don't take those managerial kind of positions because there can be a rub there, you know. Because, of course, he had every position imaginable. And he knows that there's, Swamiji knew, there's rubs you get into certain positions and you're wearing more than one hat. You're not just the guru, somebody's guru. You're also running the ashram or running this or running that. So he told this, because this Swami who I knew very well, who told me that. And so he decided not to take any type of managerial position in reference to the ashrams in the West Coast. So the thing is, for Swamiji, he would have to think that these other people, you know, are going to be hurt by that. So let them remain small and I'll take care of them and not you. It doesn't even occur. It doesn't even occur. He just is reigning, like a waterfall of compassion and care that is coming to each individual. And so for him, it's just one person at a time. It's not what is good for the whole, because what is good for the whole is not necessarily at all good for every member of the whole. So he never, this is something I've really learned from him that I think is so amazing. And we can see where, how it doesn't work. Like if you're trying to be good to the whole, then everyone has to do the same thing, you know? Because if I let someone do this, then everybody has to do it. Or if I give this leniency to someone, I have to give this leniency to everybody. And so then everybody has to fit into this little cookie cutter of rules. And for Swamiji, there was never any cookie cutter of rules, you know? It is just what each person needs, and then let all of us grow to accept what each person needs. It's I don't know. Anyway, it's an amazing, amazing thing. It's a wonderful experience to grow up with a jnani, because you have that shraddha, and you have to figure out, you know, what's really going on here, because sometimes it's very hurtful. Well, it's hurtful until you grow. Yeah. And then when you grow, then you accommodate all of these people that are there, you know, that are triggering you. That's your sadhana. You accommodate everybody, you know. If they need to be accommodated, then that's a sadhana. If they need to be accommodated, that's your sadhana. If they need to behave differently for you to be happy, that is your sadhana. You know? Because what it really amounts to is happily you can contribute to the situation. That's what it is. And so that person, that Antakarna Shuddhi, the whole first part of the Vedas is for that Antakarna Shuddhi. And that Antakarna Shuddhi, on a relative level, is so necessary just for me to be finished. Be finished where it means I'm just Bhagavan, the whole. And there's no jiva there who's always popping its head up. It's all right if the jiva's popping its head up. I'm not saying it isn't. But eventually it's not. You know, it's not, because if it does, it's so mitya that it doesn't mean anything. So that's what Bhagavan, that's what's being taught here. Let's chant this next verse and then we'll do most of it afterwards.
Devan bhavayatanena. Te deva bhavayantu vaha parasparam bhavayantaha shreyah paramavapsyata
devan bhavayatanena bhavayata anena. The sandhi there. Devan bhavayata anena. Te devaha bhavyantu vaha parasparam bhavyantaha shreyaha param avapsyata. He says, worshipping, nourishing, caring for all of the devas, accusative, all of the devas, you know, worshipping, caring for all of them, propitiating all of them with this yajna, then those devas doing that, those devas, devaha bhavyantu vaha, they care for you, they nourish you, they propitiate you, they give back to you. So you caring for the devas, and devas care for you. Remember, the devas are all the whole order, Ishwara's order. Even when Swamiji, in his commentary, he talks about Vayu and Varuna and Surya and Chandra and Prithivi, and all of the elements are all devatas, all the whole earth. You propitiate the earth, you worship and care for and love our creation as Ishwara, and then the creation gives back to you with the rains and the vegetation and the natural order. So he says, parasparam bhavyantaha, caring for each other mutually, you know, nourishing, worshipping, caring for, nourishing each other mutually. Parasparam means mutually. Shreyaha param avapsita, you attain the highest, you will gain the highest shreyas. And you will attain the highest shreyas, which is moksha. Because all of that is for antakarana shuddhi, you know. But even more than that, in my honoring the earth and the whole creation, that is something which is a necessary part of this creation. For me as a human being, as somebody who's been given the Vedas in this kind of rule book for how to manage here, part of it is that let me give that, let me honor all of the devatas. And in return, the devatas honor me. So that relationship with the Bhagavan is so necessary as a human being. And Swamiji talks also, even for Surya Devata, the sun, he says, really? We should all, and this is very Vedic, you need to get up before the sunrise. So as the sun comes up, you can welcome the sun. You know? It's told the story of one time when one Brahmana didn't get up in time, he slept in, you know. And it was at that time that Bhagavan came to visit. And so Bhagavan came to visit, he was asleep, you know. And so he missed it. He missed that opportunity, you know. The Swamiji, as the story goes, he had to meditate for another 20 years before Bhagavan paid another visit. So you need to, you really... Even how we treat the water, how we treat Prithvi, how we treat, we're in relationship with Ishwara, with the Devata, and so we have to have that beautiful care for that. That's it. One thing that came to me as I was just talking about these verses is that with Swamiji, or Swami Vagishananda, he is the embodiment of these verses. And you're so fortunate, more than any other Swami that I know, except maybe Swamiji, because of the emphasis he puts on puja and actually doing the puja and living that type of a life. It's so invaluable. And I know from all of my travels, here you have it so much, it's so much, and it's only really because of him. And that's what really gives you the tremendous shraddha and Antakarana Shuddhi that you have. It's just absolutely invaluable. It's what will allow you to have this Jnana Nishtha. It's just absolutely sacred. So I was thinking, Swamiji should be teaching this. we should ask him to teach this chapter. It'll be second nature for him. He will be able to go on and on. With so much honor, there was so much love. Honestly. So.